Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining this morning. My name is Jashi. I'm from the Accessibility Lab. The Accessibility Lab, we look at promoting digital accessibility and providing services for applications and websites so that everyone can have access, which is vital, particularly persons with disabilities. But in a lot of our conversations, we'll also see that a lot of the accessibility features and the criteria we talk about are also beneficial for a lot of other communities beyond persons with disabilities, like older people or people who have hidden disabilities and many others who really need access to the internet. So what do we mean by accessibility? We basically talk about the content being available in terms of functionality and, most importantly, compatible with different assistive technologies. A lot of our audits are informed by the latest web content accessibility guidelines, version 2.2. We started with 1.0, the web content accessibility guidelines and its structure and its innovation has been around for a very long time. And we have four branches of disabilities, but then of course it's an umbrella term because you have motor disability, you have cognitive disability, visual disability, and hearing disabilities, and there are a lot of caveats and nuances within that. But there are four umbrella terms which help a lot of the technical audits that happen through the WACG guidelines. So I'm gonna jump right in to some aspects and statistics because we don't have a lot of time. So just giving you an example of what assistive technologies look like, they can be high contrast keyboards, switches and mouses to ensure that, for example, keyboards that also have compatibility with Braille functions are one which are useful for people who have visual disabilities. And I'm now going to move to the web content accessibility guidelines, talking a bit about the few principles that are there, where we talk about perceivable, where users are able to perceive things in a way using one or more of their senses. Operable, which talks about being able to control a lot of the UI elements, because at the end of the day, we're talking about improving user experiences for persons with disabilities, but it shouldn't be confused with usability in itself. It also needs to be operable in terms of the buttons that you have and the way you click it. Sometimes mouses are not enough, so they need to be attached to other assistive devices. Ensure that the content is understandable, easily understandable, written in a simple language, having the right labels, being understood well, it being on the screen in a way that can be understood in terms of, say, the color contrast. So there are many elements that come under these principles, and then of course being robust, where it is developed in accordance with well-adopted technical standards, and also ensuring that it works across different browsers, it works across different applications, now and in the future. So I have a question for you all. What do you think is more accessible? Do you think applications are more accessible for persons with disabilities or websites? Anyone wants to answer that? You're not supposed to answer that. I know you. Okay, yeah, but anyone else? And why? Okay, why?
Because you do not have to reinvent everything.
That's a good point, yes.
And because it's easier to have access to the underlying code.
Yes, and then? What else?
Because of the web standards.
Sorry?
Because of the web standards.
No, not because of the web standards, but it's also just easier to design them. It's easier to use them. And you also have to understand that this is a lot to do with having dignity for persons with disabilities. Persons with disabilities like the same things. I'm going to show you an interesting statistic. Hopefully, I shall be able to find it. Where we talk about a lot of lawsuits, right? So a lot of these lawsuits are web accessibility. So a lot of them are actually just websites. So you try to understand that this, whoever And these are lawsuits across the board. So for example, Netflix didn't provide closed captioning. A lot of the educational websites don't have either translation capability, closed captioning. You have a lot of these other websites where people are just trying to, say, order food or trying to go online and practice buying something. So these are just lawsuits that have happened. So a lot of the reason why we do web content accessibility guidelines is because it's baked into legislation in many parts of the world, Canada, the EU, the US. We also talk about Australia, UK. We have many conversations. The EU is also extending its EU disability guidelines to private sector. And a lot of these web content accessibility guidelines are mandates. So we can also talk about the different levels you have. Just give an example. So yes, this is a former page. This is taken down, but then this is just a good example of an accessibility statement, which we think is important because, especially with open source teams, you have so many different contributors, managers, who are involved, and having an accessibility statement is helpful because you then understand what is the work that needs to be done. And not a lot of people are going to be there at the design stage. We would recommend that you should be accessible at the preliminary stages because it's easier, it's less expensive. Having it in the design stage is important. And of course, having accessibility as an internal policy is good. It's not like a one-off thing where you can have a usability or accessibility audit. They are complementary to each other. They have different features. Having an accessibility statement and having appropriate documentation helps you understand where you are. It also talks about the different users, sensory, cognitive, mobility, and talking about ability, and it also helps. And this is, again, one of the criteria under the guidelines is 2.1 because this is an older statement, and now we're in 2.2 as of last year. And there are three basic levels. So you have A, which is the basic level, AA, which is the one prescribed for government entities under WCAG 2.2, and AAA, which is your most advanced level, which talks about changing colors, or changing text, color contrast, alternative text, and all of those. It's very hard to achieve AAA because it's like, something that you would like to desire. But a good way to reach accessibility is constantly testing it through different tools, whether you automate it. And again, when you automate it, it's not because you're using AI. I don't have expertise in understanding that, but there are a lot of tools which can help you doing that. But again, code is made by humans. So testing it with different users, because you can have proxy compliance at 100% with all the success criteria that you mentioned, but then testing it time and again with different users and seeing how it happens is very necessary. And when I say different users, because accessibility is an all-umbrella branch term because there are different accessibilities. And also, its accessibility is different for different operating systems. You can have a web application in desktop that would have different errors, and that same application, say, in iOS or in Android would have different ways in which it tests accessibility. Some people, when we talk to them, we say, hey, we would like an accessibility test done in Android, and then we could use those recommendations for iOS. And that's not possible because you have different testing users, you have different users, say a JAWS or a TalkBack in Android has different issues as opposed to, an F-Droid or how it is in Linux. So yeah, testing it regularly, ensuring that you have it as an internal policy is vital. I have only 10 minutes, so I could talk about a few errors or maybe a few case studies that we've done live with open source tools. One of them is the accessibility statement, which again helps people keeping in check and then what you're doing, and of course also with legislation. So, yeah, I think this is the right slide. So a lot of the work that we do is with open source tools that look at, that work on circumvention and work on enhancing privacy and security of users. We work all encompassing, but a lot of our work is informed by this through the various partnerships we have. And we also like working with open source because open source tools are usually under-resourced. They have a lot of empathy. They have a lot of willingness to learn, but then people have budgetary constraints. It's voluntary. So yeah, we enjoy working with open source tools because they're free, they're accessible, they're not expensive. And a lot of private companies do have the budgets to have inbuilt accessibility teams, and open source usually don't. So SecureDrop was released in 2022. SecureDrop is used by a lot of whistleblower for submissions anonymously, securely across 22 languages, and given the nature of how it is. We did an audit in 2023 where we did a whole, I would say, revamp of the visual redesign of the source interface. And we've done around two or three improvements that have made things more accessible. And of course, one very interesting point is also that when you have different languages, you also need people who have linguistic capability so that you can enhance the accessibility. I know English, and my colleagues at Accessibility Lab know Spanish, so we have capability in two, but then if you want to improve accessibility of local websites, it's necessary to also have linguistic expertise and accessibility expertise. Tela is another interesting case study. They recently they reached out to us in 2022, where we came up with an accessibility audit, where they came and it was, I think, level A rating. And then we did a second audit in 2023, where we were able to convince them to have an accessibility statement. And also address some of the aspects that they had, pardon me, in their Android report. And earlier, their website in general was difficult for documentation, especially for users with disabilities. Now, after the localization support that they have, Tela is now accessible in 7 different languages. And in the coming months, they've also done their first iOS audit, which has helped a lot of users with disability report. Tela is an application used for human rights documentations, especially abuses across the world. So this is an interesting application where we talk about unlabeled elements before and now. So if you see this application where you just have an arrow, and when you normally have people who have a visual disability, they usually listen, or when you have a screen reader, you usually listen to what things are saying. So if you label the element, you know exactly where you're going within the application. So just labeling elements has been very helpful to ensure that the application is more compatible with the screen reader. You can see their back, done profile, and also like different elements, right? For example, if you have an image, having an alternative text to it, improving color contrast, also having it, and there are a lot of tools, like there are automated tools to check how your color contrast should be. There are also abundant examples of how having an alternative text helps. We also see a lot of media articles that now have alternative text, which is great. But yeah, this is a good example. I mean, it's a very simple example. And also another one is with their website, there was also aspects of subheadings, which is also helpful in labeling them, because then again, you'll be able to understand the flow of how the screen reader reads, and there's synchronization with that. So there's a lot of design, a lot of innovation. A lot of people love using icons, but then labeling them, like labeling the hamburger icon as the content page and then going down and identifying each one is helpful. I only have 4 minutes, so I'm going to go to the next one. This is an interesting example of color contrast, and these are some of the criteria that we run it by. This is again older with 2.1, but then we talk about how this has failed previous tests. and how we can improve it. So yeah, we improve the background color. We also improve the color contrasting here. And yeah, so this is a screen grab of the color contraster, which is an automated tool that's available. And yeah, this is again important where this is an example of why it's necessary to have a lot of, explaining instructions. We would always talk about how accessibility should also be an exercise related to digital literacy. There's an important feature called autosave, and autosave really saves a lot of people who have, say, mobility challenges, cognitive challenges in terms of filling out forms, banking information, and these are real anxieties in the age of a lot of cyber scams. So having an autosave feature and using a secure browser over, say, a Google Chrome, so using a Brave or a Firefox would be helpful because it does not take away a lot of your information. So basically here, the recommendation we gave here was to basically ensure that you're giving the right instructions so people know how to use it, because that's also a massive issue in a lot of the applications, because people assume that people understand and intuitively can navigate through the UI, right? So it is not their job to understand security. You should make it as easy as them as possible. And you can't assume that all readers would have the ability to be able to read the documentation in the way you have. So sending it before is helpful. This is another one where an example of target size, which is large. It's large enough for users to actively navigate through them, and also if the user is accessing content on a small handheld device, there's limited dexterity, or they have trouble activating smaller targets. So this is one of the success criteria as well, where we improved the target sizing, and it was helpful. And this is for SafeTag, another security tool. We've also done work with PDFs. PDFs is a lot more manual. And it's a lot of laborious work. There aren't a lot of tools to be able to do that. But then, yeah, we Safe Sisters is a guide for digital safety for women and female journalists, not only in sub-Saharan Africa, but a lot of countries across the world. And a lot of these countries have internet shutdowns. A lot of them don't have access to internet in a meaningful way. And a lot of people rely on content that can be easily downloadable and usable. So that's why PDFs, and you can see some of the aspects where we talk about color contrasting, we talk about alternative texts, tables, and these are some of the success criteria that were passed and that need to be manually checked. And this is an audit we did. Of course, a very important one, which was also discussed in the beginning, was closed captioning. To ensure that people who don't understand the language, or there's spoken audio subtitles for spoken audio and translated into other languages. It's also helpful to understand that English is not everyone's native language, so it also helps another community. Yeah, and providing content to people who are deaf and hard of hearing. Captions are a good text version to understand the content. They're also synchronized with audio, so it can be shown. And yeah, I've run out of time, but then thank you so much for listening. Accessibility should be a priority, and so that you can have an easily quality digital product if it's not accessible for all. I know I have 5 minutes. I'm happy to take questions. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Yes.
Thank you for the introduction to accessibility and the examples. For me as a user, a non-developer, I would like to understand if there's any tool sets available or a collection of tool sets which help me to analyze either what I'm building by myself, a non-developer, or to check websites and offering.
I would say the WCAG website, which talks about a lot of the success criteria, have examples of tools. Like there's color contrast checker. There are a lot of automated tools. There are also a few websites that give you an overview of where your accessibility level stands. But like I said, it's not a magical wand solution. I would say like widgets and all of that. But then I would say the Web3 consortium website is an exemplary place to start understanding the different criterias, and also gives you examples of tools. There are a lot of other speakers who are later on in the day who have a lot of guides on accessibility. I think Mike is coming on at 1 or 2. I'm not sure what time, but yeah, there is documentation out there of tools that people can use.
Love to have accessibility to accessibility tools.
Absolutely. That can be my next year's talk. But yeah. Anyone else? Yes.
What's your take on automatically generated captions? Because there can be errors in those still. Is that good enough?
I think that is good. There is that's actually a success criteria on that, where you have automatically caption tools and then you have someone manually sifting through it. So having that right kind of assistance, that's actually a AAA criteria with manual assistance to ensure it's good and it's in real time so that people can actually catch up on conference proceedings. Yes.
In the time that you have available to you, could you explain the difference between translation and localization?
Oh my God. Okay, so I will leave it to Erin to explain localization because she can do it a lot better. But I'm really not a linguist, but then I think Erin would be better at this. Erin's really good at localization aspects. I would say, look, I understand localization as a way in which not only do you help in translation of content, but you also help in the socio-cultural aspects of the content so that it's easily relatable to a region. In terms of like in India, there is a lot of contextual aspects that you might need to give so that people can relate to it and understand it better. How do I say this? Like, for example, there's like local lingo that we use, or there's local pop cultural references that we use that can immediately capture the attention. So say having personas would be helpful with context in that manner, with localization. But translation is just merely translating content and text, audio, into a local language. But localization helps you to make it more adaptable to the audience. Does that help?
Perfect.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Any more questions? I know we have only 2 minutes, but I'm happy to take questions outside this. I'm around all day. I have realized that I have not. I can share my details if someone wants to keep in touch. I do have a. Oh my God! I do have a QR code. Wait. I'm just trying to see if I can. And. Okay, this is the one. Yes, it's me, that's my colleague, that's my QR code to keep in touch. And yeah, I have less than a few minutes, which I've kept time, but then yeah, I'm happy to take questions outside this.